Israeli National Anthem, Hatikvah, the Hope, introducing us here to another episode of Conservative Casual Friday, a weekly blog talk radio show with your show host, Andrew Herod, where we like to examine important issues of the day for conservatives and others. And today we want to be talking about the issue of recent assaults, both politically and militarily, upon Israel, and connected to a wider protest movement, often involving violent hate crimes and outbursts of anti-Semitism in America and elsewhere in the world, and looking particularly at political developments in the United States with the emergence of what has been called a Hamas caucus, or a jihad squad within the Democratic Party, a traditional home for many American Jews politically, and analyze these developments. And so to discuss these important issues, we have Rabbi Ira Spiro, an important Jewish conservative commentator here in the United States of America, who is president of the Caucus for America. Well, welcome to the show, Rabbi Spiro.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, first, I guess, opening up, discuss with us about how Jews in America around the world have been reacting to this sort of a range of protests against Israel, and also a really significant uptick in anti-Semitic incidents we've had, for example, trending in social media on Twitter, the statement Hitler was right, or variations of that, and all sorts of hate crimes. Like, there was an incident in Los Angeles where a Muslim man tried to run over a Jew while screaming Allahu Akbar. Combined with that, we have condemnations politically of Israel, with movements, for example, in Congress to restrict military sales to Israel. What has been the general reaction of Jews in the United States and elsewhere to these developments?
Well, I think the reaction has been one of horror. You mentioned the incident in Los Angeles. Let me just introduce this by saying that as bad as remarks on the Internet are, as far as being anti-Jewish or anti-Israel, that's one thing, because at the end that doesn't crack your skull open. But when you have actual physical attacks happening on the streets of the United States, and in this case, every case has been basically Muslims, young Muslims, that have been attacking Jews. They've been attacking Jews at kosher restaurants, coming out of kosher delis or kosher butchers. They've been attacking Jews at their synagogue parking lots, on the street. They do it and they say Allah Akbar. And some that have been caught said that they would do it again because it's now in their bloodstream. They've been taught this Jewish hatred since they're young. Absolutely, since they're very young. When you have this, this is far worse than what's happening on the Internet. We never had this before in the United States, where simply because you disagree with someone's position or you don't like their race, you go out and you beat them up at a restaurant or at a deli or a synagogue. But this is happening by the soldiers of Allah. Those that are doing this consider themselves soldiers of Allah. And I will tell you that if, let's say, God forbid, black people or Muslim people were being beat up in this manner by white people, the way that Jews are now being beat up by Muslims, or a year ago being beat up in Brooklyn by black people, there would be such an outcry in this country from every segment about how this is not America. We can't allow this. And yet, except for a few radio shows here and there, this issue hasn't received that much play. And I think I know the answer. Because of leftism, we've begun to accept the fact that, in this case in America, white people are considered the oppressors. And regarding Israel, well, they're considered oppressors by the left, because they don't like America and Israel. And whatever Black Lives Matter did last summer was okay. Beating up old people, white people, looting, tearing down statues, that was all okay. It was never called racist, even though it was racism against white people. And we accept it. We don't get outraged because white people aren't considered a minority. They're not considered oppressed. The same thing is happening now with Israel and the Jews. Because the left does not consider Jews to be an oppressed minority, they don't consider Israel to be a victim country, then anything that you do to them, even physically, beating them up, so un-American, basically it goes noticed, but there's no outrage. That's the problem that we have. What we see now happening to Jews in Los Angeles, Miami, New York, Chicago, is what was happening to American people last summer. And it's because the left in this country, they control the narrative of everything. They control it culturally, politically, in academia, in entertainment. And so that's what we're seeing here. This is just the second phase in the Marxist Black Lives Matter phenomenon of beating up your enemies on the streets of America.
Well, I guess that's an interesting point. I guess you're saying then that sort of the brazenness of these attacks, I mean, you talk about like in Los Angeles, as we've seen online in videos of Jews just getting attacked in a restaurant, or, in New York City, you have these kind of like firecrackers or explosive devices thrown at Jews in the Diamond District of New York City. And then also in New York City, you have this case of this Arab American man, I guess it was, who was released from jail after having committed an assault on a Jew. He was saying, "I would do it again," and his friends were praising him. That this is really distinct, that if you have like an attack on blacks or something, or on Asians or something, we don't expect this to be so public or people to cheer this on.
That's right. I think people have to understand that simply because all of a sudden come from a foreign country and now you're in America, that does not mean that attitudinally you are American. America is a country of a Bill of Rights. The idea of fairness, fair play, tolerance, let the other guy say his piece without beating him up. These are very American attitudes. And we've had a lot of immigration. And people just assume, well, the minute you get off that plane or you disembark from the ship, you become a Jeffersonian, Republican, Bill of Rights advocate. And suddenly, whatever your teachings and upbringing was before, suddenly that's all erased and you become Abraham Lincoln. And you believe in all the American values. It's not so. A person is what he is taught, what he is inculcated. And there are many people here that have come from the Mideast, from the terrorist countries that President Trump warned us about. And they've been settled here in America because we want to do good to people. But instead of learning the American ways, they are being preached by their imams. They're being preached day after day to hate Jewish people, hate Israel, to defy, to despise the American values. And they think that here in America, they can go up and beat people up if they disagree with them or they don't like their religion or they don't like their ethnicity, just beat them up like they did back in Karachi or back in Fallujah. Part of the problem is when people come to this country, no longer are the public schools training them in Americanism and what the American attitudes are. So they bring here many of the vices from back in the Middle East, and it's the Beirutization of the United States. Can you imagine sitting in a restaurant and someone comes in and beats you up and says, "Are there any Jews here?" I mean, this is something that we read about in Nazi Germany, or at least in my case, I actually heard about from the mouths of people that had it done to them back in the 30s in Germany and Poland, because I'm that old. I knew people that were the victims of this. That this is happening in the United States of America, and you're talking about it, and maybe a couple of people here and there, but no one's talking about it to the level of George Floyd. George Floyd was one man that was killed. And here you have dozens of Jews that have been attacked, and in some cases, incapacitated for life. And in Israel, when they were attacked by Muslim jihadists, they lost their life, just like George Floyd. And it was intentional. Whereas with this cop in Minneapolis, I don't know if it was intentional, it was negligence, but there's no question that the Arab mobs coming after the Jews in Miami and New York, Los Angeles and Chicago, it's intentional. If they could, they would kill these Jewish people. And there just doesn't seem to be the outrage. And that's because Jews and Israel are not part of the preferred victimology of the left. And the left, unfortunately, they own the narrative in this country. They decide what's noble, what's not noble, what's good, what's not good. And most people just follow what they hear. So it's very disappointing.
Well, you talk about immigration and how, you know, people coming to the United States, they don't necessarily magically transform into Jeffersonian Democrats, as we might say, followers of Abraham Lincoln. Daniel Greenfield, an American-Israeli Jew, writing at Front Page Magazine for the David Horowitz Freedom Center, had an interesting article recently discussing, critically looking at precisely Islamic immigration as what you're talking about here, and citing the experience of European Jews and their confrontation with anti-Semitism in Europe and places like Sweden, like in the city of Malmo, where there's now a high concentration of an Islamic immigrant community, and how this Islamic anti-Semitism then has spurred lots of attacks, hate crimes against Jews, and so that we have to look more critically at Islamic immigration. What would you suggest there? What do we need to do with immigrants coming in from particularly the Islamic world?
Well, you have to make sure through a very serious and comprehensive vetting that they don't bring with them the ideology of Jew hatred or the anti-freedom ideology. Many of these people are raised to believe that freedom is evil, that freedom allows for activities that are not approved by the Quran, so therefore for them it is evil. You have to vet these people out. You can't have the implantation here in America of people who really don't believe in freedom or freedom for others. Maybe they believe in freedom for themselves, but not freedom for others. That would make them really good candidates to become voting Democrats. You believe for a Bill of Rights for yourself, but not for your opponents. You have to vet that. You have to make sure that they believe in freedom, that their loyalty is the Constitution, not to the Quran. I'm Jewish. I believe in the Torah. But as an American, my first loyalty has to be to the Constitution. When there is a conflict between religious law and the Constitution, you've got to choose the Constitution. In private, you can do whatever you want to do, but in the public sphere, you always have to uphold the Constitution. You also have to vet these people, weed out those people that come with anti-Jewish hatred in their hearts because they've been taught that. When you're taught something, you know, the soul, the mind, is like a blank piece of paper. And when you write something on it, and that paper is fresh and the ink is strong, it becomes embedded, deeply embedded. Well, when you have young kids whose minds are like a blank piece of paper, and from early on you start teaching them or you force them to read things that are anti-Jewish, it's embedded and it remains with them for their entire life unless there's a counter pressure to eradicate it, to uproot it, to extract it out of the brain and the thinking and the soul. But when you have statistics that tell you that people in Syria or Pakistan or Egypt, these Islamic countries, you have statistics that tell you that the rate of Jew hatred, not simply anti-Semitism, that you don't want to give a Jew person a job, but you actually hate them, you want to harm them, that it's up to 73%. That's how high it is. then you have to assume that those that are coming in are of that Jew hatred, freedom hatred genre, and they have to prove that they're worthy to come into the United States. We don't want to import into this country on a grand scale people who are going to teach hatred, going to teach authoritarianism. How does that help the country? Immigration can't all be about humanitarian. There also has to be something that's good for the country. So when you look at an immigrant who's coming in, you have to ask yourself, does this benefit the country? Well, when you have a statistic year after decade that 73% of the people from Pakistan, Iran, Iraq, Egypt, Yemen hate Jewish people, then you have to have that person, the prospective, the candidate, prove to us that he's not a Jew hater. Otherwise, we're just importing Jew hatred into America. And it's not coming from the right. It's not coming from the Christian community. In today's world, it's coming from the Islamic community. Why would we import hate into this country?
Yeah, precisely the Anti-Defamation League, as, for example, Andrew Bostom has written about in recent years from 2010 or so to 2014, they did global studies of anti-Semitism, and they found that it was precisely Muslim-majority countries that were the leaders in anti-Semitic sentiment. If you talk about Pakistan specifically, you know, that's, of course, where infamously shortly after the September 11th, 2001 attacks of Al-Qaeda, you had the Jewish journalist Daniel Pearl, who was kidnapped and beheaded in Pakistan by his jihadist captors. As he said, you know, I am a Jew. Those are really serious concerns. Thinking of importing such Jew hatred.
And Andrew, let me just say something. Mm-hmm. When we always hear this refrain, that's only a few. Most Muslims don't believe that. But the statistics say that they do believe it. They do. They are Jew haters. You have statistics across the board that show that the percentage of Muslims that hate Jews because they were brought up that way is up at 68%, 73%. So this refrain, most of them are just, they're not like that. Well, statistics say that they are. They might be good on other things, but they excel in Jew hatred. Why would we implant that into the soil of America? And it has had an effect. You're familiar with what's going on the campuses in the United States. You have these Islamic groups. It's like a pack of wolves that gang up on a solitary Jewish kid walking across the campus. They gang up on him. They push him. They bully these Jewish kids on campus. And these are kids that either were born in these Islamic countries or their parents were, and they came here. They were just born here, and they've brought this here. We never had a situation where Jewish kids or any kids in this country on a college campus were routinely beat up and attacked on the campus. And now it's extended to restaurants and to delis and to synagogues. So our immigration policy is important. I don't believe the Democrats for a second when they say it's for humanitarian reasons. We know it's for electoral reasons. If it was humanitarian, they would have brought in more Christians during the Obama years from Africa that were being oppressed. The ratio of Muslims to Christian during the Obama years was 99% Muslim, maybe 1% Christian. The Christians were in a much more dire situation. So I don't buy this idea that immigration has to do with their compassion more than us. It's a political, it's an electoral thing. Immigration can't be used to implant into this country Jew hatred or hatred for liberty. And those that are doing that are destroying the country.
Well, yeah, I mean, of course, Tucker Carlson famously on his show talked about this political replacement or, you know, wanting to sort of import a new electorate onto the United States, for which, you know, the ADL went after him and said, oh, that's racist. So, you know, that plays into, you know, we talk about this squad of progressives in the Democratic Party. You think of Ilhan Omar or Rashida Tlaib in particular, along with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez from a Latino background, Puerto Rican background. But Ilhan Omar then is from the Somali Muslim background, and Rashida Tlaib in Michigan is from this Palestinian American background, have been very, you know, really anti-Semitic, anti-Israel. You know, Ilhan Omar in Minnesota, in her district, she initially won her district with the endorsement of various Jewish leaders, local Jewish leaders with whom she talked to. And she, for example, said she did not support the boycott, divestment, and sanctions BDS movement against Israel. And then later when she got elected, she just reversed that position. Have, in particular, looking at Ilhan Omar, any other members of this squad, as it's called, of leftist legislators in Congress, Jewish leaders expressed any kind of political remorse or reconsiderations of having supported such individuals?
So this is the very important question. I get asked this all the time. There's this hope by Americans that the eyes of the Jewish people will finally be open to the danger of the Democrat Party. How many times do you have to witness the Jew hatred, the Israel hatred of Ilhan Omar before you have a light go on in your head and say, huh, this is bad. She's part of the Democrat Party. They don't censor her. There's been no censure of her. They put her on the most important committee, which does affect Israel, the Foreign Affairs Committee. How many times can Tlaib spout her anti-Semitism? And this is not simply that, well, we're not going to hire a Jew. This is basically to destroy the Jewish state. When you destroy the Jewish state, you destroy the 7 million Jews that are living there. You know, when someone says, well, I want to destroy France, but I have nothing against Frenchmen. I want to destroy Italy, but I have nothing against Italians. It's not so. So when people say, I want to destroy Israel, but I have nothing against Jews, they want to destroy Israel precisely because it's a Jewish state. Why else would they want to destroy it? Because it's a... because it makes tech microchips. If you want to destroy Israel, it's because you want to destroy the Jewish state, which is Jewish people. So we always ask ourselves, and I'm asked this by Americans all over the country, haven't the Jewish organizations and leaders seen enough of this blatant anti-Israel, anti-Semitism coming out from caucuses in the Democrat Party, be it the Black Caucus, the Hispanic Caucus, the Socialist Caucus? Haven't they seen enough? When will their eyes open? And their leaders, the Democrat leaders, are not stopping this. Pelosi's not stopping this in the House. Pelosi's not anti-Semitic, but she doesn't stop it. Chuck Schumer doesn't stop it in the Senate. He's not anti-Semitic, but he doesn't stop it. As a matter of fact, he's actually Jewish. And the answer is nothing has changed, really. The Jewish organizations, you mentioned the ADL, it's a misnomer when they talk about the Anti-Defamation League. They're not as concerned anymore about the defamation of Jews, unless if it's coming from the right. It seems that the incarnation today of the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League, is basically to do the work of the Democrat Party. It's headed by a fellow named Jonathan Greenblatt, who is a high-level staff member of Barack Obama's administration, and he sees the world in only one matrix, through one filter. Good for the Democrats, he's for it. Bad for the Democrats, he's against it. And they put him at the head of a Jewish organization. But many of these Jewish organizations are so tied to the Democrat Party that they won't do anything that would be critical of it or change it. They won't even acknowledge that which is so obvious to other people, that the Democrat Party is becoming like the Labor Party in England, anti-Semitic. The anti-Israelism always leads to anti-Semitism, because by and large what is behind the anti-Israelism is anti-Semitism, is Jew hatred. When you single out a country like Israel, which is basically such a great country, and you're always finding fault with it, it's because you don't want it to exist. Now, why wouldn't you want Israel to exist? You don't like its grapes. You don't like Tel Aviv. It's because it's the Jewish state. But unfortunately, in today's America, the Jewish organizations are so tied to liberalism as their ideology. It's actually like the liberalism has replaced the Torah. Most of the Jews in America, unfortunately, are very secular. But everybody needs a transcendent guidebook, a narrative. For us, throughout our history, it used to be the Torah, but it's not so for the secular Jews, so it's become liberalism. And the Democrat Party is their home, and they have more allegiance to that than they do to the Jewish people. It's very sad. It's very tragic. I think it's the first time in our history that we have Jews that seem to be indifferent. They have a hierarchy of needs and values. The first hierarchy is liberalism, the Democrat Party, what they call social justice. I call it social injustice. And down there on the bottom is Jewish survival. It's an internal problem that we have.
Yeah, a lot of people have mentioned how the ADL in particular has gone woke. You know, they've taken positions like they came out against the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh to the United States Supreme Court, and also they came out recently against this law in Arkansas to prevent the application of all these, you know, chemical castration and gender reassignment surgeries and so forth that mutilate the body for kids who suffer from gender dysphoria, the overwhelming majority of whom will outgrow it. And, you know, you wonder, what does that have to do with Judaism, these controversies over these issues? But that seems far more left-wing.
Correct. I'll tell you what they do, though. What they do is, these are wayward Jews. They don't get a kick out of keeping kosher, nor do they get a kick out of the Sabbath. So, but they are Jewish ethnically. So they're trying to redefine Judaism to mean liberalism. And so you've got the ADL getting involved in things that have nothing to do with the original mission for which the ADL was established. All this stuff with gender, listen, I'm conservative, so I find a lot of this stuff I'm uncomfortable with all this talk of changing genders. But whatever, it has nothing to do with Judaism per se. And the positions that they're talking about, getting involved in all these voter registration issues, have nothing to do with defending Jews. And that's what's happened with the ADL and many of the others. Listen, the worst of them all is the Southern Poverty Law Center, which you'd say is not a Jewish organization. And it's not by charter or by deed, but the fellows that founded that are Jewish. And there's a lot of Jewish crossover financial contributions to the Southern Poverty Law Center. And unknowns to a lot of people, the Southern Poverty Law Center works together with the ADL. When the Southern Poverty Law Center can't do certain things, basically like blacklisting anybody who's conservative or Republican and calling them a racist, when they can't do it, their surrogate is the ADL. The ADL is like the head above the water, you know, the very respectable organization. But they do a lot of the work that the SPLC does, which is a very unfair, un-American type of organization. What the Southern Poverty Law Center does, which were a couple of guys from up in New York who moved down to South, I think it was either it was Alabama or Mississippi, and they really didn't go there to help the impoverished people in the Deep South. They went there to try to indict as many Southerners as they could. And they're very dangerous because if you have an opinion that is different from their Marxist outlook, their cultural Marxist outlook, they brand you a racist. And once you get that brand on you here in today's America, you can lose your job, your friends, your family. It's terrible. So the ADL works in partnership with the SPLC, and the ADL has great sway over many of the Jewish organizations. So it's a very disappointing thing that we're seeing in front of our eyes here. Every Jewish organization should be outraged on the street, not only condemning what the Muslims are doing, but they should be condemning the Black Lives Matters that came out the other day and made the statement, which we knew they believed all the way, that basically Israel should be kind of eliminated. And you don't see any outrage from the Jewish organizations because their first decision always is, will it be good or bad for the Democrat Party? And the Democrat Party has become the identity of so many of these Jews who have just walked away from their heritage.
Yeah, it strikes me an interesting parallel there. Well, I guess about the Southern Poverty Law Center, well, its founder was Morris Deese, this white Southerner. Their headquarters is in Alabama, but I guess you're saying many of the financial backers or lead organizers of the Southern Poverty Law Center were actually from a Jewish background from the Northeast.
Well, Morris Deese is Jewish. Was Jewish.
I didn't realize Morris Deese was Jewish. I always thought, he started out with the founder of Habitat for Humanity and mail order business.
Let's look it up. I'm pretty positive that both founders, there were two fellas, both of them were Jewish. I'm pretty positive about that.
Uh-huh. I mean, I can imagine a lot of the backing. Morris Deese, I'm not sure, is he actually came from he actually originally defended Klansmen and so forth. He's, written about his biography, he came from the Southern background in Alabama, where the headquarters of the Southern Poverty Law Center is in, Montgomery, or is it Birmingham, Alabama? I'm forgetting right now.
I think it's Montgomery.
Yeah, Montgomery. It strikes me, it's sort of interesting. One parallel that's occurred to me is, you talk about Jews in the United States becoming really secular and leftist and replacing sort of leftism, all this tikkun olam, heal the world ideology with any sort of particular Torah observance, Judaism. It kind of strikes me as is often noted of Jews in Germany before the rise of the Nazis, during the Kaiserreich and World War One, that many of them tried to be very assimilated, very nationalist, very, pro-German, patriotic, for the fatherland, and so forth. And, of course, that ultimately didn't work out for them. That didn't save them. So, it sort of seems to be...
I'm very impressed by your knowledge, the degree that you know this inside Jewish baseball stuff. You're really very knowledgeable.
But I don't know. That just occurred to me, thinking of German history, which I've been involved with in military history. There are all these Jews who served in the German military during World War One and so forth, and got the Iron Cross and all of this. And many Jews thought, the Nazis will just pass over. We're loyal Germans. We'll be safe here.
You're very correct about that part where they said, listen, back in Germany, we're going to be saved because we're going to show that we're true Germans. And they didn't care about the survival of the Jewish people qua as a people as much as their own individual survival, and they felt that they would be saved with the German nationalism. That phenomenon is happening, but in an opposite way, because the Jewish organizations today, they are not trying to align themselves with nationalism. Matter of fact, they go crazy when you talk about American nationalism. They went crazy with Trump when he talked about America first. They're not trying to align themselves, let's say, with the founding principles of the country. They're aligning themselves with the dominant template of what's called social justice or universalism or borderless societies. They're not saying, well, we're going to be saved by virtue of patriotism or nationalism. If they would be Republicans. they shrink when you talk about America First or nationalism. In their mind, they're going to be saved by aligning themselves with all this universalism and all this so-called globalism and social justice. As I mentioned before, I call it social injustice. And they've got this term tikkun olam, which means repair the world. What it really means, Andrew, is social engineer the world, which is what the Marxism is all about. A few elitist ruling class people decide what's best for you and me, and it's social engineering, but social engineering not on a national level anymore, but on a whole global level. They think that they're going to be saved through all the universalism. So it's the same phenomenon of being indifferent to Jewish destiny by aligning yourself with, in the case of Germany, it was aligning yourself with nationalism, and here it's just the opposite. It's aligning yourself against nationalism and against conservatism and aligning yourself with the fashionable universalism, globalism, social justice, and which often, as you see, devolves into sort of like this anti-white phenomenon that we see going on, which is a form of racism. It's, you know, when you get on a train and it goes on the wrong track, slowly, then an hour later, a day later, 4 hours later, you are so far removed from your original destination. You're so far off the track. And that's what's happened to the Jewish community, unfortunately. They got on this train called liberalism, which then evolved into leftism, which evolved into all this universalism, and they are now so far away from their origins. Not all of them, but we've got about 30-35% that I would count on as good conservatives. But unfortunately, and I'm a rabbi, this is my business to try to save the Jewish people. The majority of them have been seduced by this ideology. You know, liberalism is very seductive. You're saving the world, but it sows so much destruction. We all share this, Jewish, not Jewish, Catholic. We have to fight this ideology of destruction, which is so seductive, which is liberalism. Liberalism is like in a way, like a beautiful woman with charms and it's charming. Oh, we're going to save humanity and the world. But it ensnares you, and it's just destructive when the beautiful woman is not your friend. The beautiful woman is out to destroy you.
Yeah, that's an interesting analogy. I guess going back to some of the things that you said before about, well, you know, you have ultimate loyalty to the Constitution, and any sort of personal religious views have to take a back seat and, you know, or be subservient to that. But I guess one thing maybe you could comment on, isn't Western culture and American culture, isn't the fundamental philosophical basis of that Jewish? That's one of the key philosophical bases. I mean, people always speak of like in the West and in Christianity and the values of the West, you have this union of sort of Jewish morality, Jewish spirituality. This union of Jerusalem on the one hand with, say, for example, the philosophical the rationality of Greek culture of Athens, and with then the also the legal heritage, the governance of Rome. So if it isn't following Jewish values really American? I mean, you think about like the Liberty Bell in Philadelphia where you are today, you know, it has, of course, the inscription of Leviticus on it, of, you know, let liberty ring out on the land or so. So is there then a fundamental difference that, you know, Judaism at the root of the West and of America, whereas in Islam we have historically all of these political doctrines which are fundamentally antithetical to this free Western society?
The Bible is the source for the Judeo-Christian ethos that founded this country. I wrote a book specifically about it, and it's called Pushback, Our Battle to Save America's Judeo-Christian heritage. The Judeo-Christian heritage is the formula that brought success to this country. It was the lodestar, the guidepost for the founding fathers. It didn't have anything to do with going to church or synagogue every day, counting your rosary beads or going to mass or going to shul. That's not what it was about. It was, as you mentioned, a set of civic principles, the idea of individual responsibility, accountability, freedom. Proclaim liberty throughout the land to all the inhabitants thereof. The idea of accountability, free markets, fairness, judging people as individuals, not members of groups. That is an immorality. That is the Judeo-Christian ethos, which is the combination of the Old and New Testament. Of course, they should be on board with that outlook, which is seen today in conservatism. And conservatism, if it has a house, it's in the Republican Party, certainly more so than the Democrat Party. What happened was there was a fellow named Marx. Marx came along and he changed a lot of things for Jewish people back in Europe who lived in Russia, Lithuania, Poland. And they were downtrodden by the Tsar. The Tsar was a big anti-Semite. Terrible. He fostered many pogroms. And this fellow Marx came and he saw the world not in a biblical way, but in class struggle, class warfare. Well, Jews saw themselves as the victims in this class struggle. They were oppressed by the aristocracy, the Tsar, by the nobility in France and nobility in Russia, the aristocrats in England. And so they said, this is a great movement. And so they replaced this biblical view with Marxism. And they began to see life through class struggle, which is what the Democrat Party is all about. Originally, it was class struggle for economic matters. Now it's class struggle for gender matters, race matters. It's all about oppressed versus oppressor. That's what Marxism all is. And that infected them towards the end of the 1800s, early 1900s. It's been about 100 years now. They saw that as their way to escape the brutality of the Tsar in Russia. And unfortunately, that's become their lodestar. But as you say, yes, it is the Judeo-Christian ethos, which is the combination of the Old and New Testament perspective, as opposed to Islam. If you're talking about that, I would like to mention something. Islam is not about freedom. It's not about liberty. Islam does not see the greatness in man through liberty and through conscience and through freedom of choice. Islam sees man's duty as being submissive. That's what Islam means. It's submissive. The Quran and to Allah, that's their prerogative, but it's not what the West was built upon. If it's simply a duplication of the West, there was no reason for them to have made Islam. You already had an Old Testament. You already had a New Testament. If they came, they came for something else, just like Marx. He came not to affirm the Bible, but to defy. And Islam came not to affirm the Old and New Testament, but it came to set a new direction. It's not something that believes in freedom. When they speak about in Islam, peace and tolerance and freedom, that's for within themselves. It's not for the infidel. It's not for the kafir. It's for within their own community they talk it, peace and tolerance, but not for Christians or Jews or Hindus or, no, not at all. It's not based on our principles. They'll try to tell you that. If you have a spokesman from CARE, he'll try to make you believe that Islam was and the Quran was a partner in of the founding fathers when envisioning America. It's not. It's absolutely just the opposite. Matter of fact, that's why it's so close to Marxism, because it's an ideology top down. You have the imams are in control top down. So, yes, Jewish Bible is fundamentally, should be, the conservative view, but Marx ruined it all for the Jews at the turn of the century, from the 19th century into the 20th century. And it was passed on through, you know all this, you're very knowledgeable of all this, and unfortunately it was passed on through the Frankfurt School, which had a great impact, which was down in the Village in lower New York, had a great impact on many Jewish intellectuals. The Frankfurt School was very dangerous. Herbert Marcuse, all these fellows, and the teachings of Gramsci, it's terrible. But it had a great influence on the Jewish community.
Yeah, I mean, Marx himself, of course, was, if I recall correctly, was the grandson of rabbis, and his parents, I guess, converted to Christianity or abandoned Judaism, or I forget specifically. So he grew up then in an assimilated German home, and I guess you might say he's sort of like precisely a forerunner of what you're talking about. Many Jews today in the United States, that they're moving away from any particular allegiance to Judaism and more for these universal leftist values. And once again, it's probably, communism, of course, in the end did not work out as any sort of savior for your Jews, if you look at the Soviet Union and Stalin. Looking at...
Andrew, could I just say something you mentioned? It's
sure.
Important. Leftism is inherently anti-Jewish and anti-Israel. Leftism abhors, they hate distinctiveness. Leftism is all about a one-size-fits-all universalism. There is no individual. There's no room for distinctiveness. It's all banality, sameness, uniformity, conformity. They hate distinctiveness. That's why they hate, leftists always hated the Jewish people, because the Jewish people are a distinct people, whatever you think about Jews, but they're very distinct. That's why they hate America, because America is distinct among the nations. It has a specific ideology, which is different than all the other nations in Europe. All these countries that had kings, the kings were simply replaced by a state. Instead of it being controlled from a family, a dynastic family, the Bourbons or the Habsburgs, so individual life then became controlled by the state. America was different. This concept of individual freedom and that the people govern, that was very distinct. Leftism hates it, and that's why they hate Israel. Outside of America, there is no country in the world that's distinct like Israel. It's a distinctive country. So the left has always hated Jewish people or Jewish destiny, America, Israel, because it's distinctive. And what the left is all about is universal conformity. There's no room for the individual. The tragedy is that while the left is organically, in its essence, against the survival of the Jewish people as a distinct people, it has attracted so many Jews to its cause, and Jewish people who should be fighting against it have become soldiers in its behalf. It's very tragic, Andrew, very.
Yeah, I guess that brings up a fundamental question about Jews and Judaism that we sort of indicated here, that, you know, Jews on the one hand are distinct people, but on the other hand, you know, Judaism, of course, believes in the one God and universal objective principles of morality. So, you know, Jews always have this balance of being distinctive, a distinct people, but on the other hand, adhering to universal morality. So, you know, you talk about Jews in Germany in the past just abandoning all distinctiveness and wanting to be sort of this German nationalist, but then now many modern Jews today, they want to just be sort of universalist. And so there's, as for example, Rabbi Jonathan Sachs wrote about this and talked about this, about, you know, how Jews are on the one hand, they're this particular people with a particular culture, but on the other hand, they have to uphold and obey these universal moral principles. So there's always a delicate balance there.
Well, that's called brotherhood. Judaism is not about universalism, because today universalism is, that's globalism, that's transnationalism, and Judaism believes in nationhood. If you look in the Bible, God tells the Jewish people they're a distinct nation living in a particular land, and they have to protect their borders. And God says that one of the blessings that I give to you is that your borders will be protected and you will not be infiltrated by outsiders who want to destroy your country. There's nothing wrong with outsiders per se. We believe in conversion. People don't have to be born Jewish to become Jewish eventually if they so choose. But you want to retain your culture. So it's not so much universalism. Judaism does believe in brotherhood and that there are certain norms that should be distributed for all of humanity because we all were created by one God. We're created in the image of God from one man, not many men. Adam was the first father of all of us. So we share that humanity in common. So all of the good laws, the good norms, and the good standards, they should be shared. That's what brotherhood is. But it's not universalism in the sense of throwing away distinctiveness. And the problem for many Jews is they become universalists at the expense of their Jewish. You know, there was this woman named Rosa Luxemburg, lived 100 years ago, more than 100 years ago. She was a big communist, you know, in Russia, a Jewish woman. And the Jews were under terrible pogroms, oppression in Russia. And some Jewish community leaders said, hey, Rosa, you're Jewish. We see you're involved in all this communism and helping the masses. What about helping your own people? And Rosa Luxemburg says, I have no time to trifle with the particular condition of the Jewish people. I'm too busy saving humanity in general. That's always the problem, that when you try to save everybody else and you forget your own people. Because in the Judeo-Christian ethos, your first obligation is first to your spouse, to your children, to your family, to your locale, to your country, because that's what brings responsibility. People that just say, well, I don't care about the individual, I only care about humanity, that's shirking responsibility. But when you have to take care of specific people, your spouse, your children, your family, your neighborhood, your locale, your country, with that comes responsibility, and personal responsibility is the whole pillar for the Judeo-Christian ethos. So, yeah, Jonathan, I knew Jonathan. He talked about that, and that is a constant dialectic that goes on within the Jewish persona. But actually, what we should say is that Jews believe in a brotherhood, and that the norms, good standards, should be applied to everybody. But they don't believe it. They shouldn't believe in this universalism to the extent that is being taught, because God tells the Jewish people, you have a specific land, a specific culture, a specific Torah, and you have a specific obligation to make sure that it survives. That's very distinctive.
Well, I guess that brings us back to this issue of distinct peoples working in brotherhood, then in particular talking about Israel and Islam and Islamic immigrants. There's interesting case here recently in Virginia, Northern Virginia, about near where I live, involving a member of the Fairfax County School Board, Abrar Omeish, if I'm pronouncing that right, who's actually the daughter of Ethan Omeish, a Libyan-American pro-jihadist person who used to have this Muslim-American Society, Muslim Brotherhood group, and Virginia Governor Tim Kaine had to remove him from a Virginia Immigration Board. After he had various pro-jihadist comments that became public. But his daughter, Abrar, was elected to the Fairfax County School Board, and a local Jewish Community Relations Council had given her an award for some sort of interfaith involvement in the schools, promoting, you know, interfaith harmony, recognition of all religions and so forth. But then she later tweeted out recently this month a tweet about Israel is – I screenshotted Israel kills Palestinians and desecrates the Holy Land, and apartheid and colonization were wrong yesterday and will be today here and there. And then this JCRC, Jewish Community Relations Council – withdrew this award. Jews were so offended by this this demonization, this condemnation of Israel. What does this show about the relationship between Jews and Muslims going forward? I mean, should Jews be more careful in sort of vetting their relations with Muslims here in the United States and sort of making sure that, you know, anyone that they interact with as an ally should, you know, not be someone who's going to hate Israel or promote BDS?
Well, we have to be careful. Look, in Europe, after since the end of World War II, well, at least since about 1947, there were no beatings of Jews, beating up of Jews, murder of Jews, simply because they were Jews in Europe. That doesn't mean that the people in Europe necessarily like them in their heart. You're allowed to like who you want or dislike, as long as it remains in your heart. But there were no beatings of Jews. As soon as the Islamic immigration came over Europe, as it did in the last 15, 20 years, you've got these beatings of Jewish people in Paris and other French cities and Belgium and England, too, at the hands of Muslims. They're beating up Jews on the streets. Now you say, well, why don't the Jews fight back? It's hard to fight when you're just walking down the street minding your own business and somebody comes from behind who has an intention to kill you, and they slash you with a knife and they beat you over the head with a stick and you're basically unconscious. Once you're in that condition, there's not much you can do. You're unconscious. You're bleeding. So, but this never happened in Europe. Even if the Europeans were not in their hearts pro-Jewish, but they didn't physically attack Jews. This all started with the mass immigration into Germany and Belgium and France and even England, of Sweden too, of Muslims. So we have to be careful. You know, as much as people want to be open and fair and you don't want to judge people based on the actions of their brothers and sisters, but you got to be a person with some common sense and you've got to protect yourself. And if you see that there's an overwhelming amount of attacks coming from a particular community, in this case it's Islamic, coming from the Islamic community against Jews, then it's only responsible for a Jewish person to be a little wary and say, now, one second here, I've got to watch out because there's too much evidence. Attacks from Islamic people, this happened only because of the immigration into Europe. I don't say that the people of the EU like Jews in their heart. They don't have to. You're allowed to like or dislike whoever you want, as long as it's not matriculated into action against them. So we have to be careful. In the United States of America, Jewish kids were never beat up on campuses or dining areas or in synagogues until now. And it's all being done through the hands, by and large, of Muslims. So if you're responsible for your own self-defense and your family, you've got to be wary. You can't look through Pollyanna eyes. You've got to look through eyes of the that are well informed. And statistics are telling us that we've got to be careful.
Well, indeed, yes. Certainly, judging from Jewish history, closing your eyes is not a good survival strategy. Tragically, as history has told us time and again. Well, for our listeners out there, you've been listening to another episode of Conservative Casual Friday, and we've been discussing here with Rabbi Ira Sparrow, a leading Jewish conservative commentator and president of the Caucus for America. Well, Rabbi Sparrow, thank you for joining the show today.
My pleasure. My pleasure. And that's good luck to you, and do check in on us from Caucus for America from time to time. And we'd be very pleased to keep up the relationship.
All right, excellent. Well, for our listeners, I hope you'll join us next Friday for another episode of Conservative Casual Friday with your show host, Andrew Harrod, here, where we will examine important issues of the day for conservatives and others. Thank you very much.